Greetings. Greetings once again. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, we don't do any of that stuff. We're just along on the ride with you, trying to help you get through it. And last time we were together, was it last time we were together? No, this was back in January, actually. January 11th, I went back and looked at the archives, and I noticed that at that time, we had publicly hoped for the fall of the criminally insane regime in Iran by the time the next show came on. That was our hope on January 11th. And here we are just 6 weeks later. And it appears, it's funny, I got an email from a friend of mine. He's very careful with money. He was worried that gas prices are going to surge. And so the day the bombs fell, which I think was Saturday. So the morning of the bombing, that evening, he sent out an email saying, you might want to fill up your gas tanks tonight because you might want to fill up your gas tanks tonight. I sent out an email back to everybody saying, unless you're the Ayatollah, then don't worry about it. It's okay. So, yes, doesn't get a laugh from my extremely attractive audio engineer. It's only because she already heard the joke before when I practiced it before for the... So, the Ayatollah's not worried about gas this morning, but everyone in Iran is worried about what is going to happen, who's going to govern them. Is there going to be chaos in the streets? Is the Revolutionary Guard going to take over? Is it going to be an even more criminally insane, dangerous regime that takes over Iran on Monday morning than there was on Friday night? Nobody knows. I hope they get a good government, but the odds are against them. Since they're not being conquered by a superior enemy, anything could happen. No, they're not being conquered. Yeah, they're being overthrown by a more powerful force is all. Mostly for convenience and money. Don't make any mistake in thinking that this is about revenge by the 47th president in the 47th year since the hostage crisis. None of that. That's all coincidental. This is about oil and money. Just like Venezuela was mostly about oil and money. Yes, there were moral concerns that were just. I mean, the Iranian regime should have been toppled the morning after they took our hostages. So that's 47 years ago. We've had every just right to kill everyone involved in that government. And Venezuela, terrorist, drug dealer, yes, we had every moral right. But this is mostly about oil and money, mostly. And none of the people who overthrew Venezuela, although that wasn't really an overthrow, I'm not sure what that was. It's a well-executed financial plan, I suppose. It was almost as if one mafia family went in and decapitated the capos and the dons and the other family and conveniently put everything together in their favor. It's almost like that. Not that America is run by a criminally insane mafia or anything like that. Well, no longer criminally insane, just criminal, I guess. They kicked out the criminally insane sodomite types, and we're back with the straight-up mafia, look, we're just in this for the money type guys, from New York and stuff. So, Iran, none of the people overthrowing Iran actually know about government. Donald Trump's a businessman, and maybe some sort of mafia don. I think Don looks out for his family. His family does okay, you know. No better than your family or any other family, and I hope everybody's family does great. But, you know, I take care of my family, says Don, But he doesn't understand that as the president of the United States, as the chief executive, he's obligated morally by God And we know Donald Trump thinks about God. We're going to get to that. He's obligated by God not to merely overthrow the enemy for money and oil, but he's actually obligated to conquer and govern them if he's going to do that. But Donald Trump's not qualified to do that. No one around him is qualified to do that. None of them even understand that they're obligated to do that. In fact, none of the Christians around Donald Trump are even making him aware that he's obligated to do that. So he has no idea. But he is pretty worldly wise. And so America and whoever is our allies anymore, do we have any allies anymore? America and Israel, okay. They probably make out fairly well in an earthly sense. But the moral, well, we'll get to some of that as we go on. Anyway, we have hoped for the collapse of the criminally insane, theologically wicked, evil, corrupt, blood-guilty Iranian government since 1979. So I'm glad it finally happened. I wish it were under better circumstances. Okay. So we will get to more Iran news, but before we get to that, I want to jump back to a couple of stories that now seem kind of small, but they were big. There was a headline, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, that I saw that I just had to comment on because it was so laughable. Donald Trump, who manages to comment on everything that ever happens. I don't know how the guy does it. He must never sleep. Of course, he commented on the Nancy Guthrie kidnapping saga, which apparently has gripped everyone with a TV. And so we got rid of our TV, I don't know how long ago, a couple years ago at least. Anyway, probably the single most significantly wonderful thing we ever did was get rid of the TV. But if you have a TV, and especially if you turn it on in the morning while you're toasting your bagels and making your coffee and you listen to the girls on the morning show there, everyone's been enraptured with the Nancy Guthrie kidnapping saga. And so, of course, Donald Trump has to comment on it. Why? Because Donald Trump is good at this kind of stuff. And so he knows how to ingratiate himself. Eventually, I think everyone except a very small minority of Christian people will absolutely love Donald Trump, even the leftists. Even Don Lemon eventually would want to vote for Donald Trump because Donald Trump will find a way to ingratiate himself with everyone, and everyone wants to be ingratiated. They all desperately desire the acknowledgement of one another so desperately that eventually they hate each other at the moment, but don't just wait. You just wait. Donald Trump said last week or the week before, the kidnappers of Nancy Guthrie's mom will face the death penalty. If Nancy Guthrie's mom, it's not Nancy Guthrie's mom. It's Nancy Guthrie is the person who's missing. The other Guthrie, I'm not sure of her name, but anyway, it's a famous mom. Anyway, Donald Trump said if Nancy Guthrie isn't returned, the kidnappers will face the death penalty. At which point, I mean, can anyone watching, I mean, even the vacuous people who watch the ABC's Good Morning America, CBS's This Morning, NBC's Today Show, even the vacuous empty heads and empty suits and empty skirts who watch all that, could even they believe that anyone could say that with a straight face, that the President of the United States could say the death penalty is going to be used against any criminal in America for any crime? It's ridiculous. It's more likely that Donald Trump will drop a guided missile through your bathroom window and kill you than he will be able to execute the death penalty on any criminal in America ever. And I'm not implying that Donald Trump wants to drop a guided missile through anybody's bathroom and kill them. I think I have to say that because people are so sensitive anymore. I certainly don't want to offend. What I'm trying to say is that the American justice system is incapable of executing the justice, the death penalty against criminals. And it's laughable that the president would say that. But don't worry, he wasn't serious. He was only ingratiating himself to the Nancy Guthrie population, who's ever obsessed with that kidnapping and the Today Show or whatever show her daughter's on. And so now he can check that box off. They've been ingratiated. And he'll work his way on to the next demographic. And he'll be very successful at it because he's pretty good at this sort of thing. He's a very worldly wise man. All right. And I'll get to a story. Should I do this now? Yeah, I was going to cover all the Iran stuff. But, you know, I know you know what's going on with all that. So we'll get to some of that later. But let's get to Donald Trump. Because most of this is really about Donald Trump, and that's okay. He's pretty good at this, so he makes it about himself, and that's what he wants. I think by the time Donald Trump dies, his goal is to have everyone on Earth thinking about him at that moment. Like, before he dies. Not after. He wants it before. Anyway, Matt Cain wrote an article in the American Thinker, just this morning. And it found its way into our Straight to Hell file. Matt Cain is, I'm going to assume, a Catholic. I didn't have time to find out because you can only do so much research. And the author of an article in the American Thinker is only of so much interest. It's passing interest. He wrote an article. I think he's a Catholic. Did I say that already? I believe he's a Catholic based on what he said in the article. But the headline of his article, President Trump's fixation on heaven is good for America. I just want to stop right there and just acknowledge that Bob Enyart was a prophet. Bob Enyart said that the Christians around Donald Trump will use him and ride his carcass straight to hell for political gain. And that this article is an example of that happening right now in real time. Although Matt Cain may not know any better, because while he professes to be a Christian, he's probably a Catholic and probably not a Christian and has no idea what Christianity even is. He only knows what the priest told him about the Bible and that he better be careful and be good. But Matt Cain, who served in one of Trump's administration as assistant flunky to somebody, I don't know what he was. He says a recurring theme in Trump's presidency is his acknowledgement of the existence of heaven. He said to Fox News back in August that a motivating factor to end the war in Ukraine, Donald Trump said he wanted to end the war in Ukraine to make it more likely that he would make it to heaven. And then he joked and laughed and he pretended, oh, that's not really what I'm saying. I know there's nothing that can help me get into heaven. Wink, wink, nod, nod to all the Catholics and the phony fake Protestants on Fox News and Friends. Who could watch that without puking? He went on to say, well, you know, preventing 7,000 deaths a week would be a feather in my cap on Judgment Day. Oh, but then wink, wink, I'm not saying that that could actually help. I'm just saying, you know. Yeah, he said he was just being, you know, cute. But then later, earlier this month, he was at the prayer breakfast where a bunch of fake, phony, baloney Christians willing to ride your carcass straight to hell for money entertained Donald Trump again. And he said that he thinks he probably should make it into heaven. Not because he's perfect, Donald Trump said. He's willing to draw the line at perfect. But he said he did a lot of good for perfect people. It's you people who are perfect. Come on, give me a kiss. Give me a hug. I love you all. Let's all love each other. Because if we love each other like that and tell each other how great we are, but be self-deprecating, I mean, I'm not perfect. That might help me get me into heaven. Anyway, it's Trump, according to Matt Cain. So Matt Cain is basically saying, look, Trump really feels this way. And we know he feels this way. That he's working his way to heaven, and let's help him out because it's good for us. He goes on, Trump's acknowledgement of heaven, listen to this, which is the ultimate goal every person should strive for. That's what made me think the guy's a Catholic. Or he could be a Baptist, he could be an Episcopalian, he could be, yeah, I know. He could be, he says, having a president who makes decisions with one eye on the world and the other on heaven is positive because, and so it's, he should have stopped there. In fact, I'm going to stop here for a break and get back to this because I need to think about this point before I make it so that I can put as sharp an edge on it as I can. There's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold, and she's buying the stairway to heaven. When she gets there, she knows if the stars are... All right, Don's not a lady, but he certainly knows. Can he really? Okay, well, I guess we'll find out. So let's get back to the article. Matt Cain says that having a president who makes decisions with one eye on the world and the other on heaven is positive because it leads to decisions rooted in morality rather than earthly desires. That's pretty good. That's why having a president with an eye on heaven... it's positive. I'm sorry. I had to go back and... And then Mr. Cain goes on, when decisions are made with the main intention of pleasing God, earthly circumstances also improve. And since the article is focusing on how this is good for America, these are legitimate points. He then goes to Proverbs. He quotes Proverbs 14:34. Righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Pretty good, pretty good. He then goes on. Now, the focus is why this is good for America. He goes on to talk about how Donald Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., fellow Catholic, are working on food dyes. That's two clicks up for Donald Trump to go to heaven, a click and a half for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., since he's only the secretary there. Childhood vaccine schedules, that'll bring Donald Trump 1.575 feathers. It gets RFK a half a feather because he's only the secretary. And then there's the work Donald Trump has been making against criminal illegal aliens here, deporting criminals and illegal aliens. That's a notch, 0.25 notches for Donald Trump and a notch and a half for whoever is the head of ICE in order to get them into heaven. And then, of course, Matt Cain talks about the work against criminal aliens admitted into the U.S. under Joe Biden. So he gets in the Biden political... because that makes the MAGA crowd froth and turn their cap backward and get another tattoo and register another person to vote for in the next election. And so Matt Cain punches not only the political check boxes, he clicks the religious check boxes by properly quoting one verse from the Bible. He then gets a dig in against Joe Biden, completing, closing the circle, closing the triangle, I suppose. And then he says, this president credits God with saving his life, meaning he has faith. He governs with the intention of getting to heaven, meaning he's doing works. This sets an example for America, says Matt Cain, which is why this is all so good for America. And it was good for Matt Cain because for some period of time, Donald Trump hired Matt Cain for a little while. And so Matt Cain, so does anybody notice what's missing from all this? From the whole article that Matt Cain wrote, Matt Cain, professing to be a Christian, who thinks about heaven himself, to some degree. So there's just no mention of Donald Trump. What's good for Donald Trump? Matt Cain doesn't seem to care that it's not good for Donald Trump to think he can work his way to heaven. Although I think Matt Cain doesn't understand that. Matt thinks he's working his way to heaven. And neither one of them understand that when they get to heaven or to the foyer, the portico, the waiting area, that anyone who starts listing their works as, hey, here's why I should get in. Let me pull out my resume. I was polishing it up on the way up because I did a couple of more good things right before. That's not going to go over really well. And so maybe as I go through this article, because I literally just pulled this down, maybe the reason Bob Enyart was able to be such an easy prophet and understand what these people were doing to Donald Trump, all these alleged Christians, riding his carcass straight to hell for money and political advantage. Maybe it's really because they don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know that they're doing that. So they were pretty easy pickings. As long as they get in the dig against Joe Biden and do something good, they think they're going to heaven too. And of course, I'm not the judge of any man's soul. I'm not going to decide who goes to heaven and hell. But I wouldn't have quoted that particular proverb. Although you could quote that accurately for a governing official. Like I say, I just pulled it down. I would have tried to help these people understand that they can't work their way to heaven, but there's probably not time with them because I've tried with some of these Catholics and you just can't even talk to them. Well, first of all, they think you're a heretic because you read the Bible. That's heresy. You're not supposed to do that. The priest's supposed to do that for you. He'll take care of that. He'll tell you what to do. And then yada, yada. Anyway, I've become curious as of late, by the way. Only lately having begun to understand God's grace and how it operates and how we actually get to heaven, which has very little to do with us. I mean, in a moment you can agree with God that you're a complete loser, you cannot help yourself, and just beg God to help you. That's how you get to heaven. Anyway, it's not that impressive. It's fairly embarrassing, actually. Quite humiliating. But I've come to wonder what it means when people say he's a strong Christian or he's a devout Christian. Although I think Catholics use devout because that's like the Catholic thing. And then everyone else says strong. Oh, he's a strong Christian. What does that mean? Let alone a very strong Christian. Sometimes they throw in the very strong Christian. That's just, I don't know. Are you trying to tell me how much better he is than you or how much better he is than me? I don't know. Neither of those terms apply to me. None. And if there are any others, they don't apply. So I'm a weak Christian. That's me. I'm a weak Christian. And I don't want to apply the term strong Christian or very strong Christian or devout Christian to anyone else because I don't want to contribute to their misunderstanding of anything. That's all. Have I told you my latest gospel? I keep a copy of the gospel and I keep trying to shrink it down and make it more concentrated and effective. And I've been editing it along for, I don't know, a few months now. Here's what I've come down to. This is my, if I only have 1 minute with you, this is what I would want to present. There is a God. You're not him. That's the opening. Just to get your attention. Then I go on. He's the God of the Bible who created the world. And you're going to meet him when you die. In fact, the reason you're dying is the same reason I'm dying is because you and I have sinned against God. But in his mercy, he sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die for your sins and for mine. He rose from the dead to freely offer forgiveness and eternal life to sinners like you and me. And if you'll trust him, believing that he can forgive your sins, he will. Do you believe? That last line is the closing hook. Try not to let him off the hook there. Anyway, so I've been boiling down the gospel and trying to get it into as simple terms as possible. And so that's, and if I ever met Donald Trump, that's what I would say to him. I wouldn't thank him for toppling the Iranian regime or cutting my taxes or giving someone else's grandkids $1,000, which we'll get to some of that. But I would just try to give him the straight up gospel. Because I actually care about Donald Trump's eternal soul more than I care about what he does with my taxes. I'm not saying I don't care about what he does with my taxes. I do. I care about all of that. But I care more about the fate of Donald Trump's eternal soul, which is why I'm hoping that means I love Donald Trump. I'm trying to learn how to love people. That's been the hardest part. So I asked a friend of mine, I asked a couple if they thought there would be any regrets in eternity. Do you think we will have any regrets in eternity? And so their gut reaction was no. But then they weren't able to actually tell me how they knew that. Although they only had a couple seconds, I kind of put them on the spot. So, you know, I don't expect anyone to. But they said, no, we don't think there will be. Not sure why. And so I asked the wife, I said, well, then what's my motivation to, if I'm not going to have any regrets in heaven, what's my motivation to go out and try to preach the gospel to everyone I meet? Because what I was worried about was that I'm going to cycle through all these thousands and thousands of people I met and I never preach them the gospel and I see they're all being cast into the lake of fire. And am I going to regret that for eternity? That was my thinking. Because I think mostly about myself. Just so you know, I'm not a strong Christian. I'm a weak Christian. I mostly think about myself. I mostly worry about myself. And then I worry about my family. And then maybe I'll think about you, maybe. That's what I'm trying to get God to help me with, is that last part, is loving other people. And so I asked the wife, so what's my motivation then? She said, well, I don't know, maybe love? Boy, that one got me. That's the hardest part, is the loving other people part. I told another friend of mine that had happened, and he said, did she leave off the last word? And I said, what do you mean? He said, couldn't she have said, well, I don't know, maybe love, stupid? And I said, that's pretty good, yeah. Yeah, that's the part that's the hardest to get, is to figure out how to love other people. And so, and how easy is it for me to love Donald Trump? I don't know that. The hard part is learning how to love your own wife and then your own children and then your own brothers and sisters and mother and father. That's, so if you can figure out that part, the inner circle part, then you can figure out the rest. So that's what I'm going through right now, and I'm sharing it with you here on the Weekly Worldview. That's pretty much what the show is all about. So there we go. Donald Trump having his carcass ridden straight to hell by a bunch of allegedly strong and devout Christians who none of them have ever preached him the gospel, probably because they don't understand it. So if there's anyone out there listening who can put an inside man into Donald Trump's administration who actually knows the gospel, please try to get it to him. It's like Donald Trump obviously had inside men inside the Iranian regime, if what we've read is true. And that's all very well and good. I'm glad he's good at that worldly stuff, because I'm sure it'll be beneficial in some way to me and my children and my grandchildren that Donald Trump is wiping out criminal regimes who pose an earthly threat to us. Well, we need to launch, we as Christians need to launch an operation not against Donald Trump. It would be for Donald Trump. That's right. We need an intelligent asset inside the Trump administration who knows the gospel. It's the Weekly Worldview. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. That's right. We're going to get our man inside to help with all of that with Donald Trump. Now, let's get back to Iran, because that is, that's big news. Okay, now, I have an article from The Federalist. I didn't take the author's name down because I don't have time for much of all of this. It's just a distraction for the most part. But The Federalist author asks the question in the headline, Trump said we obliterated Iran's nuclear program last June. So why are we about to go to war? That's the question. That's the hook. That's the clickbait article for everyone who's against war. I don't look. No endless wars. This is for the Ron Paul crowd and the MTG crowd and the Bober crowd. And I don't know. Anyway, the whole MAGA crowd who claims they want out of all these forever wars. Clickbait for them. He goes on. Trump said he blew up and obliterated Iran's nuclear capabilities, but now the administration is suddenly saying something different. And if we didn't actually destroy Iran's nuclear program, then when is the president going to come out and admit it? The American people aren't idiots. He writes the author who, and I'm like, wait, what do you mean? The American people aren't idiots. Have you not been paying attention for the last, I don't know, 50 years. Anyway, he says, we can handle the truth. Just tell us that the strikes last June weren't as effective as we first thought. And so now, so this guy's asking Trump to lie to him again and pretend that this is about obliterating Iran's nuclear ambitions. Instead of just telling us, look, this is about oil and money and the civilizational pivot that's about to happen with the next great advancement in technology and the balance between China and the East and the United States and Europe and the West. This is all very geopolitical and very the cap of the leverage point, the capstone of the leverage point on the next pivot of civilization for the next 500 years is it's on oil and money, frankly. And Donald Trump is a very worldly wise guy. And the bottom line is he wanted the Iranian regime to collapse so that he could get the oil and the money, or at least have a better shot at it. Since he doesn't seem to understand he has the authority to just take it, which he does, by the way, and he doesn't have to explain it to the American people. He could just do it. He's the president. He's the chief executive. He answers only to God, but nobody's told him that because I don't think they understand. But let's not pretend that we need Donald Trump to tell us a different lie than the lie he's telling for politically correct purposes, saying, well, you know, this is really about, first of all, taking out the nuclear ambitions. Secondly, it's about, you know, the terrorist regime that's killed American citizens and servicemen. And thirdly, it's about whatever else he says. Thirdly, this is about oil and money. And the chief executive of the most powerful country in the world has every right to secure the future of oil and money for that nation in the face of criminally insane regimes that threaten the future of everything and murder people. So let's not pretend. But maybe the guy writing this article is genuinely naive. Maybe that's what he thinks. I forget that a lot of these authors are younger and a lot dumber than I am. So maybe that's what he genuinely wants to hear. Maybe he thinks that's what should. Anyway, let's move on to Gavin Newsom. We have a story here. Speaking of the criminally insane, this comes from the Mafia Wars file. Is this from the Daily Signal, which is one of my right-wing alternative media organs that I go to? They're primarily a MAGA organ these days, but I'm sure they'd be willing to be your organ if you could fund ads with them. But right now, the Trump thing is the biggest thing. Gavin Newsom is, there's been a new attacks implemented on the American people by the federal government, and they call them Trump accounts. Have you heard of these? That's where the federal government says you can set up a tax-deferred savings account for your grandchild or any child born between this date and that date. And if you set up the account, the federal government will take $1,000 from me at gunpoint and put it in your grandchild's bank account. At which point every conservative says, yes, God bless America. Okay, so Donald Trump sets up the thing, the Congress passes it because they're a bunch of criminals themselves. They're willing to steal $1,000 from me at gunpoint, put it in your granddaughter's account. But now Gavin Newsom steps in and says, we're not going to honor that account as a tax deferred in the state of California. You're going to have to pay your California taxes up front. He sticks it in Donald Trump's face, right? I should read the details. The California Franchise Tax Board announced that it will refuse to treat any newly created Trump accounts as tax-deferred accounts for state tax purposes. In doing so, California is purposely making it difficult for families to fully utilize Trump accounts. This is a major break from the state's normal practices, by the way. In the case of 401ks and other federal programs, the states generally just defer and obey, but Newsom's not going to. He's going to stick it in Trump's face, and he's going to take the taxes off the top from the Trump account. That's right. Normally, the crime families in the states, they work right alongside and they go along with the main crime family up in Washington, D.C., because they're all working together. And, you know, this thing we got going, this thing we have, you know, that. They normally work together, but because of political ambitions, Gavin Newsom has decided to swim against the tide. And listen to what the author from the Daily Signal says. Savings accounts intended to help children save and invest for their future will now be taxed to fund California spending. California families, did I say families? This is all about you families. Those are the perfect people Donald Trump was referring to before. The California families will now pay taxes on their children's investment earnings. So anyway, I mean, cry me a river, earnings. How can there be any earnings? The kid hasn't earned anything, and the money in the account is stolen money. So you can't call this earnings. This is a political battle between one crime family and another over money that they're stealing from me at gunpoint. So forgive me if I don't cry a river over it. There's no earnings here. This is filthy lucre. You read in the Bible, Paul tells Timothy that if you're going to be a Christian, shouldn't be covetous of filthy lucre. Well, this is it. This is filthy lucre. And I'm sure Gavin Newsom is as strong a Christian as Donald Trump or anyone else in his administration or in whatever church he goes to. I'm sure they're both strong and or devout. I think Newsom's a Catholic, so he's devout. He's a Protestant, so he's strong. I'm sure they're both on pretty equal level. All right. Meanwhile, let's go to something that really matters. What's going on with the price of beef? That's what we've all wondered about for the past, well, ever since we found out we couldn't have a New York strip or a T-bone or a ribeye any old time we want, because if we did, we'd go broke. Which, that generally hasn't been true for most of my life. God bless America, right? But it is true now that if you're walking through the store and you want to eat a steak, you got to be kind of careful. Look at the price. I mean, I've come to the point where, and I don't know, I want to date myself, but I'll just come out and say it. If I can find a New York strip for under $10 and it's somewhere near a pound, I will buy it. And that's fairly rare, by the way. And I mean, I like my medium on me, but it's rare to find a steak that's near a pound that's under $10. That's a good cut of beef. Anyway, what's going on with this? Well, there was a posting. This is another article from American Thinker. There was another article. I mean, I'm sorry. This was a post on Twitter, I guess. Assistant secretary of something to the traveling secretary to the flunky of the something, Pete Navarro. I don't know who he is. He's a Harvard economist. Anyway, he probably doesn't even buy his own food at the store, let alone raise any animals. I mean, he might have cats. I don't know who this guy is. He works for Donald Trump. He posted on Twitter, Trump is taking on the big beef cartel. Cartel? Come on, man. This guy sounds like a 1980s Democrat accusing the Republicans of being a part of the big this and the big that cartel. And he works for Donald Trump. Oh, that's right. Donald Trump is a 1980s Democrat. I forgot. That's why the guy working for Trump sounds like a left-wing 1980s Democrat. Trump is taking on the big beef cartel. Listen to what this guy goes on. He says, four beef packers control 80% of America's beef supply. Two of those are effectively run from Brazil. Oh, no, not Brazil. Where exports to China help set U.S. beef prices. It sounds like this guy's describing the market. Uh-huh, yeah, so that's how it goes. And yeah, prices in China affect prices in this guy. And then listen to what he says. He says that all this market activity, being a 1980s leftist Democrat, all this market activity squeezes ranchers. No, he doesn't call it market activity. That I called it that, just so you know. I'm being sarcastic here if you don't get it. That squeezes ranchers and hits consumers. President Trump has ordered the Department of Justice to act. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm reading this from a Republican administration. You're going to sick the Department of Justice on operators in the free market? I know, as free a market as we have anyway. I just want to remind everyone under 40 out there, there was a time when the Department of Justice being sicked on companies, we called that leftist, communist, socialist, maniacal tyranny, those of us on the right. Now it's being done by the Republican administration in office. And it's being touted on social media by the assistant secretary to the boot polisher of whoever, that it's something good, and I'm just telling you it's not. Now, the author over here at American Thinker, his name is Jeffrey Hunt. He's not happy with this. He's probably as old as I am, if not older. And he may have never even been fishing, for all I know, author Jeffrey Hunt. He may have never scaled a fish or gutted it on his own. I don't know. But he's just writing about agriculture. He's not allegedly governing it like the Secretary of Assistant Pete Navarro or... He's not actually in the government pretending that he has something to do with agriculture. He's just writing about it, and he gives us the straight scoop on what's up with the beef. Today's biological supply of beef cattle is depleted. It's at levels not seen since the 1950s, primarily because of COVID-related supply and labor constraints. So COVID screwed up the beef industry. Bad. That's why we can't afford a steak whenever we want it. The time from pregnancy to market weight for slaughter of a cow is a minimum of 2 years, up to three for grass-fed, because a cow only has one calf a year, of which half are females, and so a rancher can only slaughter 0.5 of his breeding animals per year, or about one cow every 2 years. So expansion back to market levels that we've all been used to is painfully slow. The gestation period for sows, on the other hand, that's pigs, is less than half that of a beef cow. And a pig litter is 10 to 1 versus cattle. A sow can have 2 litters a year. So that's why pork is so much less than beef. And I'm liking pork more and more these days, by the way. It's great. Three hogs in 6 to 8 months produce the same pound of retail meat as one beef animal over 2 to 3 years. This is why, under global protein economics, worldwide pork production is nearly twice as much as beef, and chicken is even more than that. For the American beef herd to return to 2019 and prior levels, that's before the COVID flip out, cattlemen and ranchers must invest in breeding and retaining 3 to 4 million additional females for at least 5 years to allow multiple calving cycles. That can only happen if slaughtering rates decline over the next 3 to 4 years, which will inevitably raise prices further. So the author, Jeffrey Hunt, concludes with, you know, instead of hurling accusations at beef producers and calling people cartel members and threatening legal action from the Department of Justice, which, by the way, that's threatening criminal prosecution. He says Navarro and the rest of the punks another secretary to the bootlicker of the Brooke Rollins. I have no idea who he is, but author Hunt says he's a lawyer more than an ag economist. He says instead of all this vitriol, now this is the problem, folks, okay? I don't want to be too pessimistic, but the guy I'm agreeing with throughout the whole article, he ends the article with, instead of hurtling accusations, the government ought to propose meaningful multi-year capital investment incentives. For example, the USDA could, and that's where I stopped reading the article. The guy just made the point that there's pretty much nothing the USDA can do about all of this, because this has to do with cows, having cows and slaughtering cows. And what we all need to do is just stop thinking that the government has a program that can fix everything. And we need to just remember that just a few years ago, we thought all of that was socialist tyranny. Weekly Worldview. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I know I could have went on with the guitar solo there, but running out of time. Otherwise, I would. So from Where's the Beef, we go to the Bad Mom File. The ubiquity of bad moms being something of concern out there. This is from townhall.com. The FBI arrested a Michigan woman just this past month in connection with an alleged multi-million-dollar fraud scheme involving child modeling events. That's right. According to the indictment, at the FBI, this person obtained over $4 million from a family by claiming that money would be used to help arrange participation of the family's young daughter in various modeling events. So get this. A family gets bamboozled by a huckster thinking that they're investing $4 million to get their young daughter into modeling. Just let that sit in for a moment. If you think this might could happen to you, you are a bad mom. If you're worried about being bamboozled by someone getting your young daughter into modeling, you're a bad mom. The defendant allegedly took advantage. Oh, listen to the state attorney. The U.S. attorney says this way. He puts it this way. The defendant allegedly took advantage of a family's love for their daughter and stole their nest egg and gambled it away. The love for their daughter was being expressed in being willing to give up $4 million to get her into modeling. If you love your daughter this way, you're a bad mom. Or dad, or both. Yeah, now we have a statement. Have I made it clear that if you want your child to get into modeling, you're bad? You're a bad person, a bad human? Yes, that's right. I just want to make that clear because very few people are able to follow along with. Anyway, let me get I have a statement from Special Agent Jennifer there in Michigan. She says, quote, those who think they can scam Michigan families out of their hard-earned money, they need to think again. That's right. That's Special Agent Jennifer at the FBI Detroit field office. The defendant allegedly participated in a fraud scheme designed to deprive a family of millions of dollars under the false pretense that the funds were being used for their daughter's future career. Can you believe it? That's terrible. You know what the worst part of the story is that the family could be exploited for that, for any amount of money to get their child into modeling. It's like, all right. I don't know what else to say about that. I just... child modeling. Unbelievable. the whole world's full of creeps and weirdos and someone's actually... All right. That's... Anyway, meanwhile, let's go to Zero Hedge. Back in August, Zero Hedge published a chart that predicted the value of data center construction would surpass the value of office construction in about 6 months. So this is why people go to Zero Hedge for financial stuff, because... So they published this chart saying, within 6 months, we're going to be building more data centers than office buildings. Well, here we are about 6 months later, and a new chart just came out. The U.S. published the construction spending report for the month of December 2025. It confirmed that the value of data center construction has, in fact, officially surpassed the value of the building, the construction of office buildings. Now, listen to what the guys at Zero Hedge say. This is a very symbolic crossover, which makes it clear that going forward, machines and not human workers will provide the bulk of U.S. productivity, unquote. Okay, so be afraid. I know that's the news. They want to, that's how you get people to click. People either afraid or they're bamboozled or they're intrigued. You got to get them to click, right? Anyway, so first of all, they said it's a symbolic crossover that makes it clear about something that's not symbolic. So anyway, I hesitate at... anyway, they say that machines are going to provide the bulk of U.S. productivity and not humans. Well, how could that be? Because right now we measure productivity by humans, that productivity is done with machines. You know, when you look at the productivity of a construction crew, you don't like divide it by how long it would have taken a guy to dig that hole. You factor in the fact that he's got a steam shovel. I know that we don't have steam shovels anymore, but anyway, this is all, I know the AI is definitely going to be disruptive, but it's not going to change everything, for crying out loud. Just stop freaking out. People are going to use AI to be more productive. It's what's going to happen. And then we're going to factor in the AI as that's part of the productivity. Why is Jim so productive? Because he's good at using AI. Just like, why is Biff so good at digging those ditches is because he knows how to swing the steam shovel. That's all. Stop freaking out. We're all going to become more productive with AI. I mean, I hope so. The thing about AI is that it's a lot like information technology in general, which came along around the early 1990s. The information revolution and the media, I don't know if I want to call it a revolution. The advancements of the information age and the media age are genuinely different than anything that's ever been experienced in human civilization before. All the technology that includes instantaneous access to communications and realistic video and audio experiences are genuinely unprecedented in human history, at least since the flood. At least since Noah's flood, we've never seen anything like this. The immediate instant access to communications, information, and realistic audio and visual experiences has never been seen before in human history. Like I said, we don't know what happened before the flood. I have a feeling it was way more advanced than even this, but that'll be something interesting to talk about when we get to heaven. And if Donald Trump makes it, I'll talk to him about it. So let me just say that. I love Donald Trump enough that I hope to get to talk with him about this in heaven. So, like I say, anyone who has someone inside the Trump administration, I've given you a 7-sentence gospel. Try to get that to Donald Trump if you're on the inside, because apparently no one around him understands. But I hope to talk with this about Donald Trump and everybody else. I have a feeling God left a lot of stuff out of the Bible about what happened before the flood because he knew that that would be dangerous for us to even know that that was possible. So he literally destroyed everything. Didn't even want us to know. I know. Everybody thinks that knowledge is good and that there should be free and access to everything and everything should be transparent. Well, God knows better. No, some things shouldn't be transparent. Sorry. But where am I going with this? Oh, so with the AI revolution now transforming this information and communication, audiovisual revolution that happened, advancing that to the next stage, it is possible that being humans, instead of using this for productivity, we will use it to further entertain ourselves into a decline and a spiral into just damnation that we can't get out of. That's totally possible. That's totally possible. But it's not that data centers are going to replace... Well, data centers were already going to replace office buildings because who wants to go to the office anymore when we can do this from home? I mean, really, that was going to happen no matter what. Okay, finally, let's close with this, I think, from... Do I want to close with that or do I want to... Oh, I suppose I have to close with... Well, I got several things here. Anyway, have to mention Jesse Jackson. Jesse Jackson died... Interesting story, Jesse Jackson. This is another guy. Like, I think when we get to heaven, we're going to be surprised at who's there and who's not. I think, in many cases. And unlike the folks around Donald Trump, I actually think of life in terms of heaven and then earth. And if that's where God will get you if you focus enough and learn enough about him. He'll eventually take your attention off of this, put it on that. And so Jesse Jackson, when I heard he died, I wonder if Jesse Jackson went to heaven or not. I didn't think about Operation Push or the civil rights marches or the fact that he literally blackmailed billions of dollars out of the American government at all levels for 50 years. And the fact that he was a race hustling communist, lying, thieving, child killing, sex pervert. All of that was true about Jesse Jackson. I knew all of that. But my first thought was, I wonder if he'll be in heaven, because we don't know. Anyway, this comes from the Damnable Politics file. Donald Trump reflected on Reverend Jesse Jackson's life after his passing was announced last month. Jackson lived to 84 years, which proves God is merciful, but only so much. Keep that in mind. Donald Trump said, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, I knew him well. He was a good man, said, which everybody says when somebody dies. Everybody says that's the first thing they say. He was so good. When I die, I want people to say that guy was a sinner. No good, that McBurney. You couldn't trust that guy as far as you could throw him. If it wasn't for Jesus Christ, that guy would be frying in a lake of fire forever. That's what I want people to say about me.
Okay.
That's she'll be at my funeral.
No.
Lord willing, right? Okay. So anyway, don't say I'm a good guy. I'm not. Don't say he was a strong Christian. Say he was a weak Christian and he was a sinner and a loser. And if it weren't for Jesus Christ, he deserves to be frying in a lake of fire forever. But that's not what Donald Trump said about Jesse Jackson, because Donald Trump doesn't know God. So this makes it obvious that he doesn't know God, and that most of the people around him don't know God, and that almost everybody who says that somebody was good at their funeral, they don't know God either. The more I talk, the more I'm like, almost nobody knows God. This is bad. It's a bad situation. Trump went on... I don't really care what Trump went on, but just he said he was good, that's enough. And so, can a saved person, I just said that Jesse Jackson was a communist, race-hustling, lying, thieving, child-killing, all of that. So could he go to heaven? Well, yeah, and we'll find out. So here's the thing about Jesse Jackson. If you look at some of his early stuff, I mean... Kind of like, who was the other guy? Martin Luther King, the other one who became a communist pervert. It seems like in their younger life, I mean, they had a genuine conversion experience. And so we just won't know until we get to heaven, and then we'll know. But the one thing we do know, and the one thing we should say while we're here, is they're not good. They're not strong. None of us are good. None of us are strong. If it wasn't for Jesus Christ, we'd all fry in a lake of fire forever with just cause. All right. Donald Trump, this is from the Big Dumb War File. Donald Trump is calling for the Iranian people to rise up and take their government. Anyway, he doesn't understand. He's the one responsible. He broke it. They didn't. They're getting what they deserve for being a bunch of heathens. Heathens are generally governed by criminally insane maniacs, thieves. But now that Donald Trump went in and killed all those guys, it's actually on him. I'm for my plan from however many years ago. We need to take the executive and legislative branches of the government of Texas and immediately import them into Iran right now and make them take it over. That, at least that would be the correct thing to do. But no, Donald Trump's calling on the public to seize control of their destiny. Donald, the reason people aren't leaders is because they're not capable of seizing control of their destiny. There's only a few people capable of that, Don, and you should have some ready. Hopefully he does. He's got to say these things because everyone is so stupid and politically correct. But I'm hoping Donald Trump already has somebody ready that he's... Because he is responsible to put someone in there to fix all this. Or, I shouldn't say fix, but at least to administer and govern properly. Okay, that's... I don't know what else to say. Donald Trump issued an executive order. Can I close with glyphosate? Sure. Just to offend anyone left who's listening. Donald Trump, it's from the Proctocracy File. Trump issued an executive order shielding glyphosate producers from legal accountability. That's according to Based Underground. Hey, at Based Underground, the president can't issue an executive order that protects anyone from a legal accountability for anything except a very, very narrow. So that's just misleading that you just said that. He didn't do that. He can't do that. He did issue an executive order pretending to do that, but you should just call it out and say he's pretending to do this because he's siding with them, but he can't actually stop anyone from suing Bayer or anyone else making the glyphosate. So stop hyperventilating about that. He invoked the Defense Production Act to declare glyphosate essential for national security. And what that's done, and now the folks at Based Underground say he's giving a get-out-of-jail-free card to Bayer and all the people murdering us with glyphosate. That's not what he's doing, because even under the Defense Production Act, you can still get sued, and later on it could still be proven, and just stop that, okay? You're all so... Anyway, what Trump is trying to do is avoid an immediate disruption in the production of food... But the folks at Based Underground are wondering at what cost for our families and future generations. So anyway, here's the thing. You all say that there's all these studies that prove glyphosate is bad and it's killing us. And even though it's preserved probably 5 billion lives. But anyway, let's leave that aside. Let's say it is so whatever. I'm not necessarily going to buy that. Because since Rob Reiner and California Democrats pulled the big tobacco con. You remember that? Yeah. Every legally driven study declaring any billion-dollar industry as, hey, these guys are producing deadly poison, I don't trust any of those studies anymore. The amount of money stolen from working people, the working man at the gas station transferred to the leftist Karen NGOs by the whole big tobacco scam, that's enough money that leaves me knowing that every lawyer is looking for that next big scam. And a glyphosate may very well be it. It might not be harmful, any more harmful than anything else. So stop hyperventilating about it and focus on eternal things instead of earthly. Until next time, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.